The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, partner, and engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, what a beautiful day. It smells so fresh when we got up this morning. The sky looked beautiful, and all the plants seemed so happy with all that rainwater on them. And I want to welcome everybody to the show. And this is the second Monday here in February. We're getting close to Valentine's Day, which is my favorite day. I have a special guest this morning. Joining me on the phone will be Dr. Harriet Fodd. Dr. Fodd is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is a well-published author and writes about the pressures on families and the economics of the United States of America. Her articles have appeared in numerous publications. She is also the wife of Richard Wolf, and he also has a show here on KBBF 89.1 FM on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. This is going to be my third interview with Dr. Fodd, and we'll be talking about the mental health of the country and how the outcome of this election is having an effect on all of us. Hey, listen, it's official. On March 22nd, KBBF 89.1, along with Women's Spaces and the National Organization for Women Now, will be hosting a panel with the three women board of supervisors, Susan Gorin, Linda Hopkins, and Shirley Zane, who made history in our county. This is the first time in 166 years that we have a female majority on the Board of Supervisors. The event is going to be happening at the Carpenters Union Hall here at 1700 Corby Avenue in Santa Rosa, and I will be getting you more information as we get closer. So mark your calendars. That's going to be March 22nd from 4 to 6 here at the 1700 Corby Avenue. I am really looking forward to it, and I want to do a special shout out to all the three supervisors for their willingness to come on and do this panel, and a special shout out to the county council for helping to make sure that we can have them, because we are under the Brown Act and we have to be very careful about what they talk about in public. So all kinds of considerations have been made to be able to have this event, and I'm really, really excited about it. Well, I just feel so sad to announce this. A dear friend of mine, Liz Bissell, passed away at her home on Sunday morning. Condolences to her family and friends. Liz was a local activist and a retired teacher. She was a dedicated, and I mean dedicated, member of the Santa Rosa Democratic Club and served as their president and vice president. She was a woman who believed in the democratic process. She was not afraid to stand up for what she believed in. One of my fondest memories of Liz was, you know, when she was campaigning with, when Deborah Fudge in my district, the 5th district, was running for supervisor, and I get a knock on the door, and there's Deb and Liz. And I thought, Liz, what are you doing? This isn't even your district. She says, I support all women Democrats. It was just wonderful, wonderful seeing her. She worked hard for candidates, and she had a profound influence on me. It was always fun picking her up and driving her to an event or a meeting. I will miss you, Liz, and I was blessed to have known you. The world was definitely a better place because of you. And I was so happy that I was able to visit her and meet her two daughters and her cat and just the wonderful caretaker and all the different things that go on when a human being is making their transition. And one of the things that it did for me is I sat and I looked at her and I realized, I mean, Liz was 89 years old. She lived a decent life. But I looked at her and I realized how short our lives really are. You know, I look in March 18th, I'm going to be 77 years. Where did the time go? I mean, it's just amazing. But what's so important, particularly as women, is that we have to start looking at our time and see how, what we put our energy into. And right now we need to put a lot of energy into making sure that we continue to have a democracy in our country. It was very interesting listening to Amy Goodman's show and all the different areas around religion and all the different things that they're trying to bring in. And, you know, I have to remind everybody, our country was built on the fact that we could have freedom of religion, that religion was separate from our democracy, that we were not bound by anything that religious taught. We were bound by our Constitution and our laws of the land. So we really have to be careful, I mean, really careful about what we do. Well, February is Black History Month, and for the next Monday of February, I'll be talking about an African-American woman who made a difference in our world. Women need to know about their history and the contribution other women have made, particularly women of color. You know, we start thinking at one point. I know when I was growing up, I thought all there was white people. I didn't know that there were Native Americans and African Americans and Asian Americans. I mean, I lived in a very sheltered world of, you know, one religion, one color. And so it was really amazing when I woke up, when I went back to school when I was 30 years old, and I found out that there was actually Native American studies or Black history studies. And it was amazing to me to find out all these different things. Well, I want to give you a little background before I go into the woman that I've chosen. Black History Month, or National African American History Month, is an annual celebration of achievements by Black Americans and a time for recognizing the central role of African Americans in United States history. The event actually grew out of what was called Negro History Week. It was the brainchild of noted historian Carter G. Woodson and other prominent African Americans. Since 1976, every U.S. president has officially designated the month of February as Black History Month. Other countries around the world, including Canada and the United Kingdom, also devote a month to celebrating Black history. You know, it's really interesting. President Gerald R. Ford, he officially recognized Black History Month in 1976, calling upon the public to, this, I'm quoting him, seize the opportunity to honor the too often neglected accomplishment of Black Americans in every area of endeavor throughout our history. You know, it's really amazing when you start looking at some of the inventions that were made and you find out that it was done by African Americans, you're kind of surprised, you know, because these are things that we don't really find out unless we do a little digging. Since 1976, every American president, like I said, has designated February as Black History Month and endorsed a specific theme. This month, this year, the theme is the crisis in Black education. And, you know, we can expand that. It's the crisis in education, period. I mean, I'm listening to some of the things when they're talking about schools and cutting and I mean, we need to have an educated population. That is what makes democracy strong. When you have people that are ignorant, you know, at one time, when you start thinking about it, at one time, African American people were not, it was against the law for them to learn how to read. Now start thinking about that. Why would it be against the law? Why would they want to keep people ignorant? Because when people are ignorant, you can control them more. When they have some intelligence, some education, and they start finding things out, life becomes a little bit different. I know for myself, I went back to school when I was 30 years old, and it was amazing the things that I found out. I didn't realize how ignorant I was. I didn't realize how little I knew about history, particularly African-American history and women's history. I mean, I was blessed because in 1970, when I went back to school in 1970 and then came to Sonoma State in 1973, that's when Black history, women's history, all those things were alive and vibrant, and people were so excited to learn all this stuff. Well, anyways, like I said, the theme for this month is the crisis in Black education. And it's going to be the theme for the 2017 Black History Month. The theme hopes to focus on the crucial role of education in the history of African Americans. Thus, the nation is asked to look at all aspects of Black education, which can be held up as a source of celebration and an example of contributing to Black progress. But I also think that we need to start looking at our own educational system. I mean, you know, we have to educate our children. I can't believe that we even consider, you know, everything they want to take away and put into charter schools. You know, the purpose of public education is to make it a equal playing field so everybody can get educated and everybody can afford to get educated. I mean, 99% of us out there went to public schools. I did too. I learned how to read. I learned how to write. And it seems to me that we need to pay more attention to what we're doing and how we're educating our children. And I want to thank our African American citizens for giving us the opportunity to look at our education system and recognize that, hey, we can always get better. Well, the woman that I would like to honor is for Black History Month. Like I said, every Monday I'm going to be talking about an African-American woman, is a woman by the name of Ruby Bridges. What a beautiful name, Ruby. Ruby Bridges. Although she lived mere blocks away from an all-white elementary school, segregation forced Ruby Bridges, B-R-I-D-G-E-S, to travel for miles every day to attend an all-black kindergarten. Can you imagine that? She lived there in an elementary school right next to her home. And because of the color of her skin, she had to travel a great distance to get some education. What an inconvenience that would be. I remember when I went to school, it was so wonderful. Most of us only lived about 4 or 5 blocks, maybe 6 blocks from our elementary school. So we could walk, we could join the kids. I mean, imagine that you had to go all the way to another end of town where all these different, you know, neighborhoods came together. It was probably difficult to even develop relationships. How could you play with the kids? You couldn't say, hey, come on over to my house, because everybody was so spread out. Well, in 1960, let's see, this is 2017, 60, that's 40, that's almost 67 years ago. It's a long time ago. So in 1960, let's see, what was I in 1960? In 1960, I was only 20 years old. That's amazing. So if I'm going to be 77, so 20, yeah, that's about 4, that's a while back. In 1960, Bridges was thrust into the national spotlight at the tender age of 6. Now, just imagine this. Imagine this 6-year-old little girl. She was the first black child to racially integrate an all-white elementary school in the South. Now, I remember that like it was yesterday, because television was just becoming, kind of mainstream, and we were able to see news and all kinds of different broadcasts. And I remember seeing this little girl holding on to, I think it was a book or something, and walking into this elementary school with crowds of people screaming and the police with dogs. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And here's this little girl walking in, and she's going to integrate the elementary school. She's a young African-American child, and she's being subjected to this. I mean, it is unreal when you think about it. You know, the move came less than a decade after the Supreme Court Brown versus Board of Education ruling that struck down school segregation. It even took, I mean, think about it, it took almost a decade after they ruled Brown versus Board of Education ruling struck down school segregation that Ruby Bridges actually attempted to go into an elementary school. Reactions to her presence and the idea of school segregation generally, had many, many protests and came with threats of violence. I mean, I remember the dogs. I can remember those dogs barking and thinking to myself, oh my God, if I had to go to school and face this. And her mother, Bridges, and her mother had to be escorted to the school, listen to this, by federal marshals because other officials in the area weren't willing to protect her. Despite the racist backlash, Bridges and her family held firm, helping pave the way for other students who would follow in her path. Now, decades later, she's still alive and she still publicly speaks about her experience. Well, a special shout out to Ruby Bridges. At the tender age of 6 years old, she attempted to desegregate schools. And can you just imagine? I mean, like I said, I could hear the dogs barking. So congratulations, Ruby, and congratulations to our African-American citizens who hung in there and says, I want a better life for my children, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get there. So that's a lot to think about. So like I said, every Monday I'm going to talk about another woman who was an African-American to celebrate Black History Month. And I'm really excited about that because what's so fascinating is there are so many women out there of that race that have led the way for so many of us. And we need to have some level of appreciation, especially in today's world. You know, when I start thinking about it, I think of the tip of my forehead as if it had a zipper. And I undid that zipper all the way down to my big toe. And we all looked inside. We're all the same. We all have a heart, a kidney, all the different functions that we need to live. Zipper us up, and we just look a little bit different on the outside. Some of us are black. Some of us are white. Some of us are cream colored. Some of us have blue eyes, brown eyes, black eyes. You know, some are short. Some are tall. Some are fat. Some are thin. I mean, on and on we can go. We are part of the human race, and we need to start looking at that and accepting that. And that's what makes it so beautiful. You know, people call themselves Christians, and Jesus talks about the flowers, how there's so many flowers in God's garden. And that's how I feel about people. There are so many different colors, so many different religions, so many different sizes, and it's all part of the Great Spirit, God's garden. So there's a lot to think about. So congratulations to our African-American citizens we are celebrating to honor all their accomplishments in the month of February. Well, I have a few announcements to make, and, you know, it's real interesting. I am so excited. Because what is happening of late, I find people are calling me up and, you know, they want me to announce on the radio something that is going on, which shows me that Women's Spaces is starting to have an impact. So if you are doing any kind of event or there's something that you would like to announce, please email me at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, at Women's, WOMENSSPACES.com, and I'll see if I can arrange to announce it. Well, a gentleman called me by the name of Joseph, and I'm not going to give you his last name, but he was telling me that they're doing what is known as a Saturday morning activist engagement. And what they're trying to do is get folks together on Saturday mornings and start talking about what are some of the things that we can do? How can we get involved in our community to bring about more change? I mean, we're living in some very volatile times right now. And why are they volatile? Because we don't know the direction that our country is going into. So it's nice to meet with like minds and talk about things. So it's going to be happening Saturday morning. This is going to be the first one is going to be happening this Saturday. It's going to be happening Friday. Wait a minute. Wait, what's going on here? They gave me the announcement. Okay, it's going to be happening Saturday morning at 10 o'clock at the Peace and Justice Center. And it's going, what they're going to be doing is going to be, they're going to be talking about different things. They're going to help the citizenry find national organizations they strongly identify with, refer to local activist groups, inspire action, create an even bigger public appearance and presence, inform the citizenry of pressing current events, recommend new news, different news sources, and also they want your input. So that's going to be, for more information, let's see, wait a minute. Saturday morning's model back to town. Activists from outside in Santa Rosa are encouraged to attend. Okay, that's what's happening. What they're doing is they're planning a Saturday morning coffee, and the people are going to be meeting this Friday, February 10th from 7 to 8:30 at the Peace and Justice Center in Santa Rosa. And they're going to start planning this different organizations getting together for Saturday morning coffee. And I think it's really, really important. Well, one of my favorite people is the one of my favorite groups here in Santa Rosa is the Charles Schultz Museum. They support women's spaces, and I want to thank them for that. And it looks like on Saturday, February 18th at 1 o'clock, Michael Kasny, host of KQED's Forum, to speak at the Charles M. Schultz Museum and Research Center. And he's going to be talking about his newest book. It's called the New Bookshelf Author Series at the Charles M. Schultz Museum on Saturday, February 18th. I guess this is a series that's going to be happening, and Dr. Kasny is going to be the first one there. He's going to be talking about spiritual envy and agnostics quest, sound ideas, and off-mic memoir of a talk, radio, and literary life. So that's going to be Michael Kasny at the Charles Schultz Museum, and that's on West Deal Lane, and this series is free. Tickets are available, starting on, I guess they're starting right now. You know, I'm going to have to get people to outline things a little bit better for me, but that's going to be at the Charles Schultz Museum, Saturday, February 18th at 1 o'clock, and you can get a hold of them by emailing them at the, go to the SchultzMuseum.org, and that's how you can order tickets. And the event's going to be at 2301 Hardy's Lane in Santa Rosa. Well, that's a lot to think about and a lot to explore, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And once again, a reminder to mark your calendars for March 22nd, when we're going to be having the forum with the three Board of Supervisors, Women Board of Supervisors here at KBBF. Well, we're going to take a musical break. Wow, there's so much, and my voice is still, I'm still having a little bit of a problem with my voice. I can't believe that we were at the community engagement thing, and there were so many people, and it was so noisy that when you were there, you had to raise your voice. So my voice is still, it's on the heel. Anyway, you're going to take a musical break. The song I will be playing, I love this song. It's called Blood of the Ancients. Excuse me. Now we're going to do Blood of the Ancients first, sung by Betsy Rose and the Woman's Chorus. With all that is happening, this song strikes a chord in me. Until we stand as bearers of the future, demanding a better world for our children and all the world's children, the sorrow we are experiencing will not leave us. When we return, I will be talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. We are continuing our conversation about the mental health of the United States and the four-legged mental health table. So let's go ahead and listen to Betsy Rose and the Women's Chorus singing Blood of the Ancients, Hope for a Better World, and then we'll be back with Dr. Fraud.
Our veins and the forms pass.
Yes, the future is in our hands. That's a pretty hard statement. Anyway, for you just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, members, or Women's Spaces. Welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest, Dr. Harriet Fahd. Welcome, Harriet. Welcome to Women's Spaces once again.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
You know, Harriet, you're going to have to come closer to the phone, my love, and talk a little bit louder.
Okay. How about that?
That's better. That's perfect. Well, I want to tell my listeners a little bit about you before we start. Dr. Harriet Fahd is a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. And let me tell you something, folks. She's one of the most intelligent women that I've ever spoke with. She is a founding member of the feminist movement and the journal Rethinking Marxism. For 40 years, she's been a radical committed to transforming U.S. personal and political right. She writes regularly for Truth Out and journals such as Toucan and the Journal of Psychotherapy. Her latest book, written with Richard Wolff, that's her husband, and Stephen Resnick, is Class Struggle on the Home Front. She writes a blog called Economy and Society, also with Richard Wolff, and it appears on her website, Harriet, HarrietFahad.com, and the website of Richard Wolff, rdwolff.com. Her newest publication is an essay written with Tess Fried Wolff, that's her daughter, Imagine Personal and Sexual Life Under Socialism, which appears in the forthcoming book, Imagine Socialism in the U.S., HarperCollins, 2013. And before we go into the interview, I would like to tell my listeners that Dr. Wolff is also on KBBF 89.1 FM every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. And at the end of the month, Harriet is also a special guest with him and does a marvelous job. I have to say, when you add a woman to the picture, it just makes a big difference. Welcome, welcome, Harriet. Welcome once again to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you know, we have been talking about the mental health of the United States of America.
Yeah.
And I went on your website, and I really want to recommend to my listeners, you have two wonderful articles on that particular topic. One is how Obamacare could be dismantled by the Republicans, which I think is very, very interesting. And also you talk about the problem that happened with the white men's rage, which we talked about last time that you were on, about the fact that there's wage discrepancy and all the different things that are happening. Can you talk a little bit, give us a little bit more background and talk a little bit about some of the symptoms that demonstrate that in the U.S. we are having a mental health crisis, and then we're going to get into talking to some solutions.
We have all the symptoms that happen with inequality, according to a very scholarly book called The Spirit Level. We lead the world in obesity. It's one of the reasons that, in spite of the fact that we have the most costly health care in the world, we do not come anywhere near the healthiest population. Obesity is one of the signs of inequality, where people literally eat their hearts out and become obese. We also have...
Wait a minute, Harriet. What a phrase, eat their hearts out. In other words,
that's
the frustration becomes so great that they turn to food?
They sit. It's a combination. They often sit in dazed despair over their lowered wages, their poor standard of living, their isolation from others, eating our non-nutritious food, our Cheetos and, Fritos and other snack foods that have no nutritional value but lots of calories. And they literally eat their hearts out. They swallow their pain. It's an epidemic in the United States, where one out of three or four adults is obese and one out of 10 children. Because people are not active, they don't go out together, they're not connected, and they eat their hearts out. It's very sad. We are the fattest people on earth.
I know, so you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I notice when I go to the supermarket sometimes, I notice that not only just the women and the men, but also the children.
The children. 1 in 10 is obese, which is terribly painful. And another symptom is homicides. We lead the industrial world in homicides by a wide margin. We have 7 times that of the next highest homicide level.
Now, when you say homicide, you mean people committing suicide?
I mean people killing each other.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, partly that's because we lead the industrialized world, the 30 wealthier countries, in ownership of guns. Personally, we have more than one gun, more than one for every single citizen of the United States. So we have about 330 million guns floating around. And we also are the most military nation. So both on a larger level and in a personal household level, we're armed to the teeth. And therefore, of course, we have the most homicides, the most killing of children by accident with guns. We also have the biggest prison population in the whole Western industrialized world, all 30 countries. And we have really one of, we have the worst child well-being, according to the UNICEF Index on Child Being, some of the worst child well-being in the world. In every respect, we're second to worst. Britain is worst, except healthcare, where we are the worst out of all 30 in terms of healthcare for our children. Our life expectancy is going down in the United States, which is a new development that has come with inequality of healthcare and inequality in general. Addiction is going up, and people are increasingly medicated. We take more psych drugs than any other Western industrialized nation that counts. We are 6% of the world's population, and we take 66% of the world's psych drugs. We have the highest anxiety in the world. So these are some of the mental health symptoms that show that the United States is in terrible shape.
Well, you know, how do you think, you know, it's really when you, as you're talking, and also I just, according to this article that I wrote, very interesting on your website, how Obamacare could be dismantled by the Republicans. You talk about that the antipsychotic drugs alone net the pharmaceutical industry at least $14.6 billion a year. I mean, that is amazing.
Look, and they're put on through corruption. Our country's mental health is destroyed in many ways by corruption. For example, Zyprexa, which is an antipsychotic, which was not recommended for children. Dr. Biederman, head of the Child Psychiatry Association at the time and at Harvard, said that it was fine to use for children. All it did was give them diabetes. It did not cure the children. It did not change their psychotic behavior. And therefore, when it was exposed that Johnson & Johnson was pushing Zyprexa for children, they were given the highest fine that had ever been levied, $3.4 million. And when they asked a doctor who was involved at Johnson & Johnson, well, you've been given the highest fine, so why didn't that stop you? Because they're continuing to do this. He said, hey, if you're racing towards $17 billion, you pay the traffic ticket.
Oh, my goodness.
So that in terms of mental health, it doesn't help mental health if what you're doing is only counting the money and utterly discounting human beings.
Well, how do you think all this influenced the election for our new president? who is, you know, is talking about cutting medical, he wants to get rid of Obamacare. I mean, I don't understand how people vote when, you know, that you, we have some medical care. I don't think it's the best in the West,
but it's
better than nothing. And at the same time, people are voting to, and they're cheering, yay, he's getting rid of Obamacare. I don't understand how, is that part of the mental illness?
Yes, it is, and partly it's ignorance. The people who voted for him come from the South and rural, mainly rural areas that have very poor education, and we are a depoliticized culture. Their exposure to the news is Fox News, and they're voting no. In one of their demonstrations, they had a big sign, "Get the government out of my Medicare." Hello?
Get the
people don't understand, but what they do understand is their wages are lower, that they never make ends meet, that the mass of people, and particularly men's wages, have lowered almost continuously on a downward slope, and they can't afford to live, and they're very angry. And the right wing has convinced them the problem is the government, not the capitalists who exported their jobs and mechanized and robotized and computerized them and dispossessed Americans for cheap labor in the whole world. Now, with the advanced communication systems, you can open your factory in Bangladesh where there's no ecological standards, no protections, no health care required, and terrible salaries. Of course. You know, and so that if all you're thinking about is making more and more and more, that's what you do, and that's who's dispossessed people. But they want to suck up and kick down. They want to blame the government or somebody less fortunate than they, immigrants, women, African Americans, other minorities, and they are very angry. And what the right wing has given them is a hatred for the government as what is oppressing them, when actually the New Deal government is what saved them. But, you know, they are angry, and they're looking for a cheap, easy way. They don't want to take on the corporations that run this country. So they blame the government, and they have been successfully hoodwinked in that respect.
Well, you know, it's real interesting when I think people forget the importance of government, because government is there to govern, and they're there to make sure that we have equal representation and that everybody so idealistically has a little piece of the pie so we can have a decent life. And it sounds like it's really becoming very, very imbalanced. And, you know, and we're the ones that are suffering from it, because I see that a lot. I see a lot of depression around me, a lot of people who, you know, want to give up. That's why it's so important, all these actions that are coming forward, all these marches and people gathering, because we have to talk to one another. We have to recognize we're not alone. Well, Harriet, we have talked about this, and one of the things that is so fascinating to me is that you have some ideas on what is needed for a mentally healthy, stable life. And you talk about what I coined, and I think you coined too, is called the four tables, the four legs of a table. Can you go into that a little bit? Give us a little background on what that is all about.
Well, there are four legs to a mental health table, in my estimate. And they're all about connection, because people disconnected are lost. And the first one, the first leg that you need for a stable table, is some kind of really close relationship. It could be with a sex partner, a spouse. It could be somebody who puts you at the center of their emotional life, or among other people in the center, where if you have a crisis, that becomes urgent for the other person. It could be a close relative. It could be a really close friend. It could be a partner. But that's one leg of a stable mental health table. A second one is a wider circle of people for whom you're important. People who you see sometimes, not always regularly, but you keep in touch with. And each of you knows you have some importance to the other. A third is people that you connect to through doing something together. It could be something like being on a team together. It could be something like working on a PPA project. It could be people at work with whom you work as a team. It could be people who are politically uniting, as they are all over the United States, to create marches and demonstrations. It could be any number of things where you connect around a shared purpose. And that's been a terrible loss in the United States. As of the year 2009, we had less people connected in any group than were in bowling leagues alone in 1970, which is quite stark. That is beginning to change. And then a fourth leg of our mental health table that has been very wobbly and is now beginning to change is a wider concern for the world outside of you. That's been really clearly shown in people's concern for all those refugees who happen to be the unlucky Muslims in the seven countries where Muslim countries where Donald Trump doesn't have any business connections or hotels, even though there were no terrorist acts on the United States for any of them. But they were stranded at airports. And the caring that is an example of mental health came when millions of Americans got to their airports, got in the street, and demonstrated against it. And now it is no longer allowed. He can't just do that on his own.
Well, you know, I want to go back to what you were talking about the importance of connections and how that might be changing. We just had here in Sonoma County, in Santa Rosa, actually, it was called the, well, we had two events. We had a women's march where we're just a small community, so we had over 5,000 people that joined. I mean, it was an amazing action. I mean, the streets were just flooded. I couldn't believe, I'd never seen so many people in Santa Rosa at one moment. And I have to do a shout out for our police chief. I mean, it was amazing the way our police department handled it. There was not one incident at all, nothing. And then the second incident, the second gathering we had was called the Community Engagement Fair, where people came together, and I could not believe it. You know, as I told you before, I'm president for the National Organization for Women and also doing women's spaces. I had a table there. KBBF had a table there. 102 organizations came out. Every single organization, you know what their big complaint was? They ran out of materials. People were running to get new stuff photographed, you know, copied again, because there was over almost 7,000 people that showed up.
Wow.
And what happened is they had a small room. It was a small room, and they said, oh, my God, if we would have known this many people were showed up, we could have gotten a bigger space. But the theme was constantly, how do I get involved? What do I do? How do I join? How can I help? So do you think that is what is changing right now in the country?
It is totally changing. People who have been, you know, the United States hasn't had much political activity for 50 years. Now, suddenly, millions marched in the Women's March, and it was a women's march, but it was unlike the women's movement of the 60s in which I was involved, in that it was women, men, old people, young people, kids, every color, because we're all in it together.
Well, you know, I asked a woman at the march. She had two little children with her, you know, pushing a stroller. And to me, that was kind of, you know, it was risky because all these people, and it was raining. I mean, all the elements were out there. It was amazing. And I said, you know, I really want to commend you for bringing your children. She says, I'm a mother, and I want people to see this is who I'm responsible for, and I want something done. And
right.
It was riveting to me to see all these women with their baby strollers walking along, having the same attitude. Now, how does that play into your four legs? I mean, how does that help situations when people are coming out in bulk like that?
Well, one of the things that's happened since Trump was elected is a lot of people became depressed. And instead of staying home and being depressed, they decided, I do have the power and I will change it. And it's not only women. It's women and men, it's old people and young people, it's people of all colors, and it's people saying, we can change it together. It's hope. One of the things that stops people from having any semblance of mental health is a hopeless sense that life is not worth it. That's what leads to homicide and suicide and destructive acts. And here are people saying no, like the woman you quoted. This is about hope. This is about the future. When in the march in New York, I think there were a million people, although the paper reported 400,000. And I was most impressed by an African-American guy who was there with his two daughters in a stroller. And they had signs, "We're going to be nasty women when we grow up." And they were about three. And, because Trump called women who assert themselves nasty women. And I asked him, "How come you came?" He said, "Because I need a future for my children and myself."
Well, you know, this is a perfect time, Harriet. Harriet, yes. We're going to take a quick musical break here. And we're going to play a song called The Battle Hymn for Women. And it's sung by Betsy Rose with the Women's Chorus. And I think you'll really enjoy this. And then when we come back, I'd like us to continue with our conversation and talk about where we are in the United States as far as mental health goes, with what's going on with all the marches and all the different things that people are getting involved. And also, what can interfere with people really elevating themselves at this time? So let's take our musical break, and we're going to listen to the Battle Hymn for Women sung by Betsy Rose with the Women's Chorus.
Great.
My eyes have seen the glory of the flame of women's rage, kept smoldering for centuries, now burning in this age. No longer are we prisoners in that same old gilded cage. That's why we're marching on. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. Move on over, or told us to speak softly, to be gentle and to smile. Expected us to change ourselves with every passing style. Said the only work for women was to clean and sweep and pile. That's why we're marching on. It is we who've done your cooking, done your cleaning, kept your rules. We gave birth to all your children and we taught them in your schools. We kept the system running, but we're laying down our tools. That's why we're marching on. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. Move on over, or we'll move on over you. For women's time has come.
You think that you can buy us off with crummy wedding rings. You never give us half the profit that our labor brings.
Our anger eats into us. We no longer bow to kings.
That's why we're marching on. We have broken through our shackles. Now we sing a battle song. We march for liberation and we're many millions strong. We'll build a new society. We've waited much too long. That's why.
Yes, the time has come. That's amazing. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces. I am your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And on the phone with me is Dr. Harriet Fahd, and we're talking about the mental state of the United States and also her four legs to mental health. Welcome back, Harriet. What did you think of that song?
It's a very inspiring song, although I really do think, and I talked about it on Economic Update, for this latest economic update, now that men's wages have gone down faster, and now that men are in terrible trouble too, and now that everybody is losing social supports of every kind, with Trump, men and women can be in it together in a way that will make a people's movement, very powerful. And women were the spark in the Women's March. Women were the spark. But everyone was there understanding that we all need each other.
Oh,
the
definitely.
Black Lives Matter people were there. There were Native American groups. You know, it's New York. There were Asians and African Americans and whites and everybody, and men and women and kids in wild abundance. Because what's happening, I think, which is a great boon to our mental health, is that people are realizing my only chance is in connection with others. They have the money, they have the armaments, but we have the power of the people, and that's what we have to use. So it's very, this is a very exciting time in America's mental health. For 50 years, people were disconnecting. They're now connecting, and that's very impressive.
Well, you know, but also at the same time of the connections, what could stop it? You know, what could interfere with it? I mean, we're talking about, you know, my biggest fear is all of a sudden there's some horrible situation is going to happen. All of a sudden there'll be martial law, and then we're all disconnected again. What are some of the things that you think that can interfere with this progress that we're making that we really need to be aware of?
Well, one of the things is that the Trump administration and the local groups who are supportive of him are trying to take away people's right to meet, people's right to demonstrate. Those things could be destructive. The other thing is, in organizations, it is very important not to let police plants or right-wing plants come in and create conflict, which destroys organizations, because nobody wants to go to a meeting where they came to empower themselves listening to people squabble. And I remember, and you need to have openness and nobody creating conflict and telling you what to do. So what's very important is to have rules of how people are treated, and that nobody has the final solution. Everyone needs respect. As a founding mother of the women's movement, I remember groups tried to come in and push us this way and that. And I started a motion, which was passed, that everyone is welcome at our meetings. Unless they know everything that we're supposed to do, then they can't come. And that worked out very well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I remember when we would have meetings when I was going to Los Angeles City College, and it was the height of the Vietnam War with the protests, and we would have these meetings, and the leaders would get up and says, okay, who's here from the FBI? Raise your hand. You know, we made it very clear that we knew somebody was there and had to watch out for those people who were making these suggestions that were a little bit far out and could create a lot of problems and a lot of violence. So that's one thing. People can be aware. Get to know who's in your group. What are some other ideas?
Another thing is not to allow little conflictual things to come up. And to remember why you're there. You're there because united you have the power, and separated you don't. But also to remember that we're in it together, and not to get into political correctness hierarchies. That's one of the ways that they really did. The FBI and the CIA funded Operation Mighty Wurlitzer, where they paid Gloria Steinem as a CIA agent for the women's movement as well as others, and they paid African-American leaders to come into the movement and make sure that the African-American civil rights movement, unlike what Martin Luther King suggested, but to push it to a race only, blacks against whites, and in the same development with women, women against men, making it gender and race only. We have to remember we're people together, and we need people to be sensitive to each other, but we're in it together, and we can't let anyone divide us.
Well, also, I think that is the excitement. I mean, to be honest with you, that is the excitement for me, is that suddenly recognizing that the highest priority is community. That is where our resources, that's where our power lies, in community and in coming together. And also to be aware that what we're fighting against is people who think they're kings and queens. And what we have to do is we have to learn how to be more of an equality where we come together and we work together and not try to squash each other because one person knows the best for the whole group and they're going to get their way no matter what. So there's right. a lot of things to really look at. Well, I can't believe it, my love. I mean, we've had plenty of time here and we're still running out of time. So what I would like to do is any final suggestions or ideas that you have that you would love to give our listeners, and also your website, how people can get a hold of you, and anything else that you would like to share.
Democracy at Work, or at my own personal email, hfraad@aol.com. And I'm writing now a blog for Democracy at Work. I have another blog about women in the election that's already posted there. Because really, what we need most is to connect around what we jointly need and believe in. And we can't let anything stop that connection. And that is the soul of mental health, connection with other people in a respectful and hopeful way.
Well, you inspire me, Dr. Fahd, in ways that I cannot even express on the air. So give us, what is the it's called Democracy at Work?
At Work.
That's the website. And
yes.
What is your personal email?
hfraad@aol.com.
And I will have that listed on Women's Spaces, www.womenspaces.com. Well, Dr. Harriet Fahd, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces and sharing your wonderful wisdom and actually giving all of us hope and a way to look at things differently. And I really want to encourage, I mean, there's so many good articles, and the blog is just amazing. Democracy at Work. Thank you so much, Dr. Fahd, and wishing you a wonderful, and I look forward, and I want to let my listening audience know that if all goes well at the end of the month, we're going to have Harriet Fahd here in the studio live, and I can't wait till that happens, and I want to wish you a wonderful, wonderful day, and thank you
so much. Thank you. Take care.
You too, my love. Well, Bye. That's it for our show. Special thank you to Dr. Harriet Fahd, who's a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist in private practice in New York City. She's also, like she said, a founding mother. She is a founding member of the feminist movement and the Journal of Rethinking Marxism for 40 years. She's also been a radical committed to transforming U.S. personal and political life. And to me, the strongest message that she gave us for our own mental health, two things. One, get connected. Two, get connected in lieu of buying a bag of chips. That was my thought when she was talking about it. Well, I want to remind you and to tell all your friends, Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. This evening. I am so excited. I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements. And I want to also let people know that tomorrow, Tuesday, a very important thing is happening at the Santa Rosa City Council. They're considering a resolution of the Council of the City of Santa Rosa to safeguard the civil rights, safety, and dignity of all Santa Rosa resident. There's going to be a big discussion on that, and I understand that the organizers have some real concerns about this proclamation, and they're trying to encourage people to please show up. That's going to be tomorrow. The meeting starts at, I think it starts at 1 o'clock, and if you go on to Santa Rosa City Council, you can look at the agenda, and you'll see exactly the time that this agenda item is going to come up. Anyway, I'm excited. I get to listen to my own program tonight, and like I said, I'm available for speaking engagements. And if you have any announcements, you know, birthdays, any of those things, please email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. I'm so happy to announce it. Remember, our children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that. This is Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
Yeah.